dark, cold world out there.
There's a time to live and a time for a man to die. There are places for dead men in the earth and the sky. Don't you venture too far now, 'cause you can't come back from the place where the good guys always dress in black. When you go to the old saloon at the Dead South End, gonna find you a man there wants to be your friend. If you dare to deny his wish, you'll be dead by dawn. So give him a drink and a smile and then move right on. Rednecks with white faces, don't go putting them down. Rednecks with white faces, they ain't no rodeo clowns.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Ring Respect Radio right here on the Video Bros Network. I am Bobby Munson, and I'm joined, as always, by the man with the angelic voice, the throat of the goat, Mr. Papa Smokes. Once again, Papa Smokes, how the hell are you doing?
I'm doing great, Munson, and how are all my wrestling people doing out there?
Hopefully everybody's doing great, being fantastic, loving some of this nice weather we've been having as of late. It's off to a great start in 2021. Hopefully things are going to start getting better. Everyone's going to get healthier and things will get back to normal sometime soon. Fingers crossed anyway. But in the meantime, Pop Smokes, we got some wrestling to cover here on Ring Respect today. We're covering MLW episodes 114 and 115, giving a full rundown and review of the two of them, which includes the semifinal match from the Opera Cup and the finals from the Opera Cup. So something very fun to look forward to right here on Ring Respect Radio. If you have not done so already, make sure to hit the subscribe button down below. Click the notification bell so you know anytime we have new content right here on Ring Respect Radio. So, Pop Smokes, I think we need to get right down to it. MLW 114, let's kick it off. I think this is the one that this started off with a little bit of a showcase out in the parking lot showing the arrival of Alexander Hammerstone and Richard Holiday to the arena, about to have an interview where they are attacked by some masked men in the parking lot.
Yeah, we have this little vignette, so to speak, and I guess what they're doing is showing us that there's still some tension and some ongoing dispute between Dynasty and Contra, because these masked men are probably or allegedly representing Contra, trying to jump Hammer and Holiday in the parking lot, but winding up getting smashed themselves. So they're setting the table for this episode and for this next pay-per-view, I suppose.
So how about that little bit of comedy that we got in here from Richard Holiday when Alexander Hammerstone went to go slam the one guy's face right into the front hood of the car, and Holiday, hold up. It's a rental. So he ends up giving him a back elbow instead.
Yeah, that's good. I think they should play to Holiday's strengths. One of them is that he's kind of a funny guy. He's a good talker, and this joke came along well. They also have a little program where Alicia, too, is the announcer, is kind of suggesting that Richard Holiday is phoning her lots and interested in her in some way, and there was a little bit of ha-ha made about that, too. We'll see where they go with that in the future.
Well, I believe she's Canadian, so, I mean, you can't blame the guy for going after a fellow Canadian anytime.
Sure.
But you're moving on from there. We're kicking the night off, and we've got a match to start off the night. We've got a MLW debut again, a new face. Buku Dao, I believe, is the way we pronounce it, going to be taking on L.A. Park Jr. So some initial thoughts before we even get to the match. Initial thoughts when you saw Buku Dao entering that ring with TJP as his ring mentor.
Yeah, I guess we saw him briefly in the previous episode when he seconded TJP out to the ring for his match. And as we understand, he's the understudy. They're comrades in wrestling, and Buku Dao, with a martial arts background, but has been training professional wrestling style with TJP for some time. I don't know if this is his actual ring debut or just MLW debut, but we got a new guy. He's definitely not large in stature, if that's what you're getting at, Munson.
But I think it looks. Yeah, I was going to say, sorry to interrupt, but that's exactly where I was going with that one, too. I mean, you look at him and it's like, wow, I got to see what he does in the ring, because definitely doesn't come across intimidating in stature by any means.
I think with this guy's resume, however, it kind of counteracts that a little bit. This guy's got all kinds of kickboxing and martial arts skill. He's got a nice physique on him for a small man, and so you know he's functional as a wrestler. So, yeah, interested to see what he's got in the ring against the much larger LA Park Jr.
Yeah, LA Park Jr., quite a large guy, much like his father before him and stuff like that, and always being joined at ringside by his pops there as well, too. I thought, despite it being a debut, I didn't really necessarily see this one going the way it did. I mean, especially with the experience of LA Park Jr. and the size of him and everything, but Buku Dao getting a roll-up win and, you know, whether very surprising and utilized in probably a good way. This is probably one of those times where I could get behind this as long as it doesn't happen too often. This is one of those new, fresh face, gets that upset roll up. You know, maybe reminiscent of the day when Sean Waltman, 1-2-3 Kid, rolled up Razor Ramon unexpectedly back when he made his WWF debut.
Yeah, good point. And look where that went. I mean, they made a X-Pac. So, I was a little surprised by the ending of this match as well. But like we said, he kind of looks pretty good despite being a small guy, but I think they probably have a plan for him. Having him go over LA Park Jr. is a pretty decent win on TV, so they've got a plan for him for more of a middleweight division program, I imagine. And they have a couple of the smaller individuals in mind for him later on. Possibly could we see him up against a Leo Rush or a Myron Reed? We'll just have to see. I'm pretty sure Court has a plan for Buku Dao.
He could even come up against the guy who cut the next promo on the show. We're talking Jordan Oliver cutting a promo here, talking about his grudge match coming up with Simon Gotch at Kings of Coliseum. Thoughts on the delivery of this promo from Jordan Oliver?
I can see where you're leaning with this already, Munson. I've always kind of wanted to like Jordan Oliver. I think he has some work to do. Here's another guy that needs to get some more time in the weight room, get some steak and potatoes, and get a few pounds on there. I think his promos are not doing it for me. They're not intense. He kind of almost seems like he's joking around or assing around a little bit. I think there's potential with Jordan Oliver, but he's got work to do, I think. So what did you think of this?
I'm in the same boat as you. Again, like I think I've said it many times about how like the character, the way he comes across really gets under my skin. But I think when I reflected on it a bit, it's very reminiscent of I had tons of guys that acted this way when I was in high school and stuff like that, that thought they were the cool shits with you know, the backwards hat and the pants halfway down their ass back in the day and stuff like that, talking like they're very gangster despite growing up in the mean streets of Saskatchewan, Canada. You know, like, it doesn't come across intimidating enough yet. I think, like you said, a little bit more meat on the bones of Jordan Oliver and a little bit more oomph in that voice and stuff. Like, he still sounds very much like a kid to me yet to really come across as something that I need to take serious or intimidating. And again, like you said, comes across like you're not sure if he's clowning around like a class clown sort of thing. There's most likely a lot of potential here with the kid. Obviously, he can carry himself talking in front of a camera, which is, you know, like not great, but still better than a lot of guys are currently capable of doing. So being that he's so young, you know, I think give him some time. We might see some more better things from Jordan Oliver in the years to come.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. And if you look up some of Oliver's previous matches that aren't in MLW, you'll notice that he has a style that's completely different than his character on MLW. He's very much a 100 miles an hour, a flippy reversal guy, dive to the outside sort of dude, which he doesn't do in MLW, which is kind of like refreshing to see that he's actually going to work a different style, work the style that the promoter wants him to work. And I think he'll only win out and learn more by working a different style than that, by not doing everything 500 miles an hour and doing the current trendy, flippy style. I prefer him in the Injustice faction, where he can do some heel stuff and just work a more pro wrestling style.
And he's definitely going to get that work given to him from Simon Gotch as well, too. So this is actually, in many ways, a really good match for someone the level of Jordan Oliver to work with someone with that experience and that type of ring style that can definitely ground his game and bring it to a level that he can learn a lot in that one little match that he's got coming up here.
Yeah, this match has actually caught my interest a little bit more now that I think.
Definitely so. So from there, speaking of catching our interest, it's the big man, the Black Hand of Contra, Mads Kruger, and he's taking on a two-man combination of Bud Heavy and Daniel Sterling. So now they're going with Mads Kruger squash matches, but against two opponents at the exact same time. What did you think of this one, Papa Smokes?
I think it was a good match for TV. It was a good platform for Mads Kruger to look completely huge and completely dominant. I think it would have been a poor idea to put him in a competitive match at this time. Well, I suppose it was competitive. He was against two men, but however, they didn't get much offense, if any, in this match, because Mads is just an unstoppable monster at this point, and he gave his finisher to one wrestler on top of the other wrestler, left them lying there in a crumpled heap, and then the underlings came out with the body bags and put them in, and it's a good spectacle. I like it. It's a squash match, which is only a minute or so, or 2 minutes in length, but they made it longer by the sort of ritual afterwards of putting these wrestlers' bodies in these body bags and kind of setting up the whole Contra pose and everything. I like how they're doing it. It makes it look good. It makes Mads Kruger look extremely undefeatable going into Kings of Coliseum against Alexander Hammerstone.
And wasn't it fantastic, the work done by Rich Bocchini and St. Laurent on commentary, talking about how backstage officials were doing their best to try to hold back Alexander Hammerstone, who was trying to fight his way out to the ring to take on Mads Kruger, making Hammerstone look like an absolute badass because he's trying to come out there and face this monster in the ring right then and there. But at the same time, again, I think to the smartest of us, we know damn well Hammerstone wasn't even in the building at this point in time, but really selling the idea that he's back there. They're holding his ass back, letting sure that they're saving this one for Kings of Coliseum.
And completely true. And I like the way that they made reference to Hammer's backstage disturbance in other segments of the show too, which kind of led to its believability a bit. I mean, but the other guys who were trying to do promos were making like there was a disturbance going on in the back, which just made it all more believable. Well done on their part, I think.
Totally agree with you on that. So well done. Great job. Makes me more interested for this match that I was already excited for. But from there, we talked about this on the last episode of the show, Pop Smokes. Lena officially making sure that everyone knows she's bringing Emil Mortez to MLW. We're pretty excited about that. It's a big dude, big intimidating veteran of the ring that they're bringing in there. I mean, I almost feel like MLW is really stacking the card in their favor with some great talents that they can utilize going into 2021 here.
Yeah, that's part of Cort Bauer and MLW have that working relationship with AAA Lucha in Mexico City. And there's another smaller promotion in Tijuana that they're working with. So, I mean, absolutely. Trade talent with the Mexicans. Get some of their best guys. Do some shows down there and get a MLW fan following going Mexico. As we understand that Bauer is trying to do that in other parts of the world too. It lends an international feel to the show, which lends an aura of real sporting competition in it too. And it just shows the wide world of wrestling, the colorful world of wrestling, but different characters that there are that we never get to see because they're in different countries or we don't get their TV shows. Well, here we're going to get to see Mil Muertes for a while on MLW TV, and someone that probably not a lot of modern fans are experienced in watching. So again, it's fun for the fan because you get different talent all the time.
Definitely. So it's going to be very unique to see. So From there, we were expected to have the return of Alexander Hammerstone to in-ring competition since his beatdown at the hands of the Black Hand of Contra, Mads Kruger. But as we were saying, they had sold the idea that this backstage fight was going on, that they were having to keep Alexander Hammerstone under control. And we were let known that Alexander Hammerstone had been removed from the building and that they would not be proceeding with a one-on-one competition to make sure that nothing further went down between Contra and Alexander Hammerstone. Great way to keep Hammerstone in that conversation again without having to put him right back in that ring. I mean, they've been saving that since that first night of the return. That was that one match that Hammerstone had. Since then, they've built this beautiful story, have not had to waste him a bunch of matches leading up to it. And you couldn't be more excited for this main event opportunity coming down on Wednesday night.
Yeah, very well done. Just the hype machine working overdrive just to make sure that everybody knows that this is a huge match that, as terrifying as Mads Kruger, it's equally strong as Alexander Hammerstone and completely unafraid of Mads Kruger dying to get his hands on. This is a really good promotional technique right before the pay-per-view to keep both wrestlers in the conversation, keep the fans' minds on, and keep the fans invested in this match. One quick thing I wanted to bring up, too, before we get to the first match, is that this is the first I've seen on MLW's that they seem to have a partnership with Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazine, which is pretty cool, I think. And Pro Wrestling Illustrated is doing top 10 rankings like they used to do in the magazine. This tickles me especially because I was a kid before the internet was around and reading the wrestling magazine, so I always was interested in the rankings. And if you don't mind, Munson, I'll just read these out quickly. We'll see how Pro Wrestling Illustrated has ranked the wrestlers in MLW. They had at number 10, Mads Kruger, the newcomer, not proven yet, so he's in at number 10. 9, another new guy, Calvin Tankman. Number 8, Richard Holiday. Number 7, Laredo Kid. Number 6, ACH. Number 5, Myron Reed, holding that middleweight championship, so he's in the middle of the pack there. Number 4, L.A. Park. Number 3, Filthy Tom Lawler. Number 2, Low-Key. Number 1, Alexander Hammerstone. And then, of course, champion Jacob Fatu. So I find this it kind of gives me a kick back to the old magazines and such. And it's nice that Pro Wrestling Illustrated is still somewhat relevant in the world of wrestling. Their online publication still gets a lot of reads. And, of course, probably what they're best known for nowadays is the PWI Top 500, where they rank the top 500 wrestlers in the entire world. And, I wanted to add that bit in there just to further MLW's integrity and seriousness in professional wrestling. They got PWI on their side, so thumbs up to that.
So Pop Smoke, yeah, the PWA top 10 there, very interesting. How much do you agree with the top 10? Because I think I'm pretty on board with it, although I might have reversed the positions of Calvin Tankman and Mads Kruger in those spots that they were given.
Okay, I still think it's pretty good. I mean, having the champions sit alone on the top. The number one is Hammerstone because he has the open weight championship belt. Number 5, Myron Reed, because he holds the middleweight belt, so he's not wrestling all the roster and all the heavyweights. I think it's pretty good. Low-Key at 2, Lawler at 3, L.A. Park. It's arbitrary, I suppose, and I mean, it's hard to put together ratings at this point when they haven't been active for a number of months until the past few weeks, but I just like this partnership, Pro Wrestling Illustrated and MLW. It shows that MLW is one of the legit feds out there that a fine publication like Pro Wrestling Illustrated will acknowledge and work with.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I really enjoyed this too, and I was hoping you'd bring that up because I figured that was right up your alley, Pop Smoke. So fantastic job there. But moving on from there, we hit up our main event of the evening on MLW 114. This is the other semifinal match from the Opera Cup. We know that at this point, Low-Key is in the final. We need to know who he's going to be going up against. And we got a matchup between ACH and Filthy Tom Lawler. Bring us into this one, Papa Smokes, and give us your thoughts.
Yeah, this is looking like a great semifinal match right here. ACH had taken some time off last year, and I think this was one of his first or his first match back since the whole COVID shutdown thing. But we all know he's an awesome talent, a great high flyer, a pretty strong guy, pretty excellent grappler. But he's in there tough against Filthy Tom Lawler. We've talked before about his MMA experience in the Ultimate Fighting Championship, and this guy's got the cauliflower ears, and he's a striker, he's a wrestler, he's a brawler, and a wild character in this. So, I mean, this is going to be a tough one to pick, Lawler versus ACH, but the winner goes on to the final to meet Lowkey in the 2020 Opera Cup.
Yeah, and this, I mean, what are your thoughts of the match itself? Because, I mean, quite frankly, Pop Smokes, I watched this one. This came across as one of my favorites from the entire tournament in the end.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I like the way MLW does this with talent that can handle it anyway, such as Lawler and ACH. The first 5-6 minutes of the match was serious grappling. Like, it was not looking like the pro wrestling style, but looking like grappling on the mat, like jiu-jitsu or Olympic freestyle wrestling. And I like that because it lets the grapplers go back to their skill set, go back to their sporting backgrounds and such, and have a little match with each other. And again, there has to be, doesn't have to be a winner or a loser in this first few minutes, but it's setting the stage for what's to come. I simply love that when a pro wrestling match starts.
Yeah,
and which are things about.
So yeah, as you're saying there, Papa Smokes, in that first several minutes, that absolute grappling on the mat, I absolutely enjoyed watching that. I thought it was fantastic. Great to see, especially when you got two guys very capable of putting it on and making it interesting and not, you know, making it an absolute snooze fest and stuff like that, like some people seem to think that style is. From there, I mean, it went into some great wrestling action and ended up being a phenomenal match, in my opinion. Definitely, like I said, probably one of my favorites from the cup itself. And Filthy Tom Lawler picking up the win. I kind of had a thought this was the way it was going to go once I found out that Lowkey was in the final. I kind of figured this was heading for a Lowkey Filthy Tom Lawler. It did not take away from the match at all for me. Even despite that, I still felt strongly that this was a great match of interest to me, and I enjoyed it from start to finish.
Yeah, I also thought that, man. And Filthy Tom continues to impress me of how he's transitioned from MMA fighting to pro wrestling style. He's really done it quite nicely. His timing and his psychology is good. He was playing the heel in this match, as he is currently in the MLW, and he got some tremendous heat on ACH throughout this match, and ACH had to struggle and claw to make a huge comeback. And, of course, just when it seemed like ACH was on the verge of victory, Lawler advances by pinfall. And, an awesome match. Kept you going up and down. Didn't know who was going to win. Had a feeling like you did, but they put on a one heck of a show.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Great job by MLW making this Opera Cup definitely investable and worthwhile to take the time to, you know, watch. And now we've got, you know, a great finish to it. We're going to get Lowkey versus Filthy Tom Lawler, which we're going to talk about right away as we transition to the next episode here. But any last thoughts as we finish up with MLW 114, Papa Smokes?
No, it's really just a solid show, introducing some new talent, putting over some big talent for the pay-per-view, and then an exciting match in the Opera Cup tournament, which is just on TV, which won't have anything to do with the pay-per-view. So, yeah, a little bit of everything for everybody. So this one sets up the pay-per-view, sets up the final for the Opera Cup, and we're headed to MLW Fusion number one.
Yeah, number 115 it is. So this is going to have the finals of the Opera Cup featured on it. But to start things off, we get a video package which kind of explains the history of the Opera Cup, naming some of the former winners, you know, for example, Hackenschmidt and Stu Hart, who was the final winner of the Opera Cup, and just kind of giving everybody a little bit of that history so you know what you're in for and what the prestige behind this trophy is, and the two guys that are going to be going after it in Loki and Filthy Tom Lawler at the top of the night. Great match, especially for a free match on YouTube. Great build to this one, don't you agree?
Yeah, I love it. One of the facts that I liked about the Opera Cup, the actual statue itself, is that they were saying that MLW took this trophy itself to the same company that maintains the Stanley Cup trophy for hockey.
Yes, yeah.
That's who restored it and shined it up all real nice. So just another little fun fact about the Opera Cup for our listeners.
And doesn't that also give it a more of a sporting feel at the same time? Like, this is being treated as a, you know, on the level of something like a Stanley Cup. So, I mean, they show it the kind of respect it deserves. And therefore, when you treat it with that kind of respect, fans will accept it as that kind of respect kind of thing. I think in some ways almost becomes more respectful than half of the wrestling championships that are out there these days, because those things are passed around like, you know, a pair of dirty underwear nowadays.
Yeah, I agree with that. Once your company starts taking a famous, and you put a turntable on it, and all, it starts to lose the shine completely. And I just like that they stored this artifact from wrestling's long past, but get new in 2020 and make it a title to winner, a first trophy, and they have all the wrestlers come out, look at it, have a nice look at it. They all want it real bad, everybody that's in that tournament. So I love the way they've done it and built up the Opera Cup.
Yeah, it's been done really fantastically. Let's kick into the actual show itself. That's just the recap heading into what we're about to see. But we're getting the matchup. We were talking about these guys in our predictions video to the Kings of Coliseum, the Dirty Blondes, taking on the team of Ariel Dominguez and Daniel Starling, I believe the names were. This was an opportunity to get to see the Dirty Blondes before they get that tag title match against the Von Erichs. What are your initial thoughts with the Dirty Blondes here?
Completely new to me as a tag team. I hadn't seen them before. MLW looking good, kind of a throwback team to the 80s. They look like an old Southern Texas NWA team. A couple of kind of redneck fellas, big boys, cowboy hats, bull rope with a big cowbell on the end, and looking rough and tough out there with a lady manager. And this is obviously going to be the next tag team in their roster, and they're probably going to push them up to the point where, as we see now, that they've got a tag team title match against the Von Erich.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. Definitely enjoyed watching this. The Dirty Blondes picking up a victory and getting to showcase themselves in the tag division was fantastic to see. From there, Papa Smokes, we had a Alexander Hammerstone promo. Again, leading into his whole thing with Mads Kruger, and you know, also mentioning that he's after Jacob Fatu for the title there. Again, we've talked about this over and over again. This whole episode of MLW was really promo heavy, I found, because the end of this is going to be all focused on that Opera Cup match. So really, I mean, as far as I know, unless my notes are different than yours, I think we had that Hammerstone promo and then a low-key promo prior to the actual match itself, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, yeah, I think there were even a few more little packages in there, too, because this would be the last episode before Kings of Coliseum pay-per-view, and so they needed extra time to promote that, and also probably some extra time for the Opera Cup final match. You know that one's getting 20 or 25 minutes probably at least, so yeah, there's only going to be two matches in this episode, but that's fine because we've got all our promos updating the feuds going into the pay-per-view on 6th, and this is quite often how it's done. Give some of your talent that last week off, let them get ready for the pay-per-view, and use promo packages to reel the fans in. We're going to make the purchase for the pay-per-view.
Oh, exactly. And yeah, I mean, it's pay-per-view usually, but this is not one that fans need to purchase. So if you haven't already seen it, because this will be out afterwards, you can check out Kings of Coliseum right on YouTube. So thank you to MLW for putting out a quality show like that absolutely free, where, you know, they could have very well been asking for people to be paying up for this one.
Yeah, no, I completely forgot when I was saying that too. And you call it a pay-per-view, but it's actually just a feature show, and MLW hands in many pots with sponsorships and such like that. They're going to give this show to the fans for free, and man, this is really quite a good promotional technique, I think, and I think they're going to get a lot of eyes on their product.
Definitely they will. And so all those promos were leading up to what we're about to get into here, Pop Smokes. We had Low-Key doing his promo cutting beforehand, and then we're right down to it. It is the finals of the Opera Cup. It is Low-Key taking on Filthy Tom Lawler. And if I was a betting man before this thing kicked off, my money was on Low-Key winning this thing. I thought the older veteran wrestler, the way this has been built, the way it's been presented, I just really had a feeling that this was to put Low-Key's name amongst all those names that have been on the Opera Cup. Now, why don't you lead us into this a little bit, and then we'll start talking about the finish to this one and talk about the match itself as well, too.
Sure, sure. I felt the same as you going into this match. I kind of was giving the edge in the back of my mind to Low-Key also because, like you said, veteran and well-respected around MLW, but also, if you remember the 2019 Opera Cup, he's one of the returnees from that, and they mostly have a different little lineup this year. But Low-Key was featured heavily in last year's too, even though he didn't make it to the final. He worked really hard in that tournament and did a lot of selling and a lot of punishment to his body, etc., and had a few competitive and very long matches in that. I kind of had it in my mind that if he was in it again this year, that they might go his way too. So that's kind of how I was thinking when I came into this too. But if you look at this match on paper, it's very, very hard to call. We've got a couple of martial artists who are now professional wrestlers who can obviously shoot if they want to. Between the two of them, they have to know how many holds and how many transitions and such. They're going to be able to work a great match with each other. So, yeah, I kind of had the feeling that maybe Low-Key was going to come through with this one. What did you think of the match itself? There was a lot of good sports-based grappling in this to it. It looked like it could be a UFC fight for the first 6-7 minutes.
If not longer even. I think I even spoke out on social media saying that this was hands down probably my favorite one-on-one, you know, basically mat wrestling encounter of all of 2020. In terms of being an actual physical wrestling match and looking like a sporting competition and stuff, I don't think you could get closer to a sporting fight of any kind in all of 2020 than what this match delivered.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, Munson. This looked completely completely real and could like a true contest between two guys that are struggling against each other. And I think that's the beauty of having guys like this on your roster. They can do little shoots like that, little few minutes of let's just grapple for a bit. Let's see who's tougher. If I can get you down, that's fine. But if you get me down, that's fine too. We're going to come up and do our spots later. But this just looked like awesome grappling of two guys more or less the same size and just having an all-out great grappling match with them, which then turned into a greasier match with some rules being broken and some outside distractions and such. But one of my favorite spots in this, Munson, was did you see the part where Lawler put Low-Key in the figure four leg lock and then Low-Key was sitting up trying to escape, trying to punch Lawler in the face, and Lawler then put his arms in a key lock.
Yeah.
He's got the two submission holds on at the same time, one on the legs, one on the arms. Nice, very nice touch.
And, you know, something like that takes a true technician to know not only how to put that on, but to pull it off in that exact moment and make it look as good as it did. It was phenomenal. I loved it. I thought it was a great timing. Great job by Filthy Tom Lawler. Yes, one of the best spots, other than And I got to say, I loved the finish of this matchup.
Yeah, yeah. It was a well-booked finish, I think. It got low-key out of there without making him look weak. But Lawler getting the pin on him, kind of a rolled up position, and then sticking his feet on the ropes. I liked the way that spot went too, because it wasn't perfect. Like, it didn't look choreographed at all, because Lawler really didn't get his feet on the ropes hardly at all, because they were scrambling to get that spot. It looked convincing. It looked real. It looked like a guy getting pinned for real. And of course, that's exactly what we wanted pro wrestling.
Yeah. And anybody who hasn't seen it, actually, Lawler in the corner there and, low-key coming in with that, what would you call that move, Papa Smokes? I'm not too up on the, like, that's a kind of a flip kick of sorts into the corner that he gives
to him.
And then, all of a sudden, Lawler just kind of fell with his weight on a mostly deflated low-key and managed to pick up that three count. Looked like he was going to try to put his feet on the ropes, but I think he almost sold that he didn't quite even have the energy to cheat at that point, and that the pinfall happened because both men were completely beat and deflated at this point.
Yeah, yeah, and that kick he had received like was basically knocking him over, but he fell on top in the advantageous position, and that three count comes pretty quick after a long match like that, and here we got a new Opera Cup 2020 winner, Filthy Tom Lawler. Nicely done, too.
And, man, he's been killing it as of late, looking good. And, I can see Filthy Tom heading right back into that title picture as we move forward in MLW. I think he's got every bit of the what they need in a champion and stuff. I like what he's doing with his new faction and stuff, Team Filthy with Violence is Forever. Now he's got the Opera Cup win behind him. Just all the momentum in 2021. And I'm really enjoying the promos that he's been cutting as well lately, too. I think he's really starting to come along nicely and is going to start to become a much bigger name, too.
Yeah, I think so, too. My only worry is that hope MLW can hold on to him, because if I owned another Fed, I would be looking to get this guy. He adds legitimacy and just some good old fun to your roster too. He's completely legitimate in the ring, and yet he's kind of a wacky and funny guy outside the ring and in his promos and stuff. I think he's gold, and he's gotten so good, and I think he's only going to get better.
He's a wacky and funny former MMA fighter. See, he kind of reminds me of somebody we know from around here named Mitch Dangerzone Clark, eh?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah, sure does. That would be an interesting lockup if ever we could facilitate the idea of Mitch Dangerzone Clark and Filthy Tom Lawler, two former MMA fighters like that, taking place, especially if we could book that in the old Prairie Pro Wrestling ring.
Oh, it'd be a dream come true. Let's work on it, Mike.
Well, you sure do. It's not like we don't have the time to work on it at the moment until we can get back to those live shows like we've been craving. So, anyway, anything else to add to that the whole episode there, Pop Smokes?
No, I think it was just a strong episode overall. It didn't go wild with having a whole bunch of matches. It had an itinerary of things to do, put some new people over, pump the big show, the Kings of Coliseum, and finish that Opera Cup with a fantastic final match, satisfying the fans. I think this episode had a bit of everything.
Sure did, and what a great ending to it, a great matchup. Opera Cup, fantastic this year, so thank you, MLW, for putting that on, carrying on that tradition, and giving us some excellent wrestling to top off 2020, so thank you very much. And we want to thank all of you for tuning in every time to Ring Respect Radio. We appreciate all the love and support, and everybody who has subscribed already. And if you haven't, hey, go ahead, do us a favor, click that subscribe button down below and turn on the notification bell as well. We're always pumping out new material right here on Ring Respect Radio on the Video Bros Network. So please check it out, and also go check out our friends over at Backbreaker Media, who have past episodes of Ring Respect Radio up on both Podbean and YouTube as well. So check them out and give them a like, a subscribe, and a shout out from your good old Video Bros. Until the next time we hear from you, have a great day.
There's a time to live and a time for a man to die. There are places for dead men in the earth and the sky. Don't you venture too far now, 'cause you can't come back from the place.
bright faces. Don't go putting them down. Rednecks with white faces.